The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garb from Everyone Loves Guitar. I have a really cool guest today. We're with Doug Cower. Doug's the owner of Cower Guitars out in Sacramento, California. He started Cower Guitars in 2005, and most recently he brought out Titan Guitars, which is their big seller, actually, all of a sudden, and DRSRacks.com. With Cower Guitars is a custom guitar builder, like I said, out of Sacramento. Doug mixes traditional building techniques, materials, along with modern technology to create unique and great-sounding guitars that look very freaking cool. Cower Guitar strives to build beautiful instruments, but they recognize these instruments are ultimately tools. So in addition to having unequaled looks and sound, Cower Guitars are extraordinarily comfortable and easy to play. Cower Guitar players include Jimmy Vivino from the Conan O'Brien Show, Walter Becker from Steely Dan, of course, Dennis Casey from Flogging Molly, Scott Holiday from Rival Sons, Tom Dumont from No Doubt, and the late Michael Burks, and Gary Hooker from Brad Paisley. Doug, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. Good to see you.
Oh, thank you for having me. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. This is, I didn't realize Jimmy Vivino also plays like all over.
Everybody?
Yeah. Like, every time I see Government Mule, I've seen him two or three times up in the Beacon, mm-hmm. up in New York. Jimmy's always there. He's like the local.
Sure.
He's always playing around New York, which is kind of cool.
That guy must love flying more than – I love to fly, but he must love flying more than anybody I know because he is always, you know, back in New York or all over the place. Yeah, it cracks me up.
Before we get started, I just wanted to ask you, and I want to make this interview about you, but I have a quick question about Michael Burks.
Mm-hmm.
Like on a whim one day, there's a place down here called Skipper's. It's one of those places where like – everybody passes through, like on their way up. Every town has a place like that. Right?
Yep.
So on a whim, I just happened to look, and I was felt like going to a concert. And I look up, and I'm a blues guy, and I'm like, I see this guy Michael Burks. I look at some videos. I'm like, holy shit! It was literally the same day. So I ring my son up. I say, hey man, we're going to a concert tonight. So we go there, and it's one of those places. Like I'm, you know, it's like it's sand, and all the people are like older and stoned and drunk, gets to sit on it's like a kind of a hippie sort of place. Which is great because I could stand literally like kind of almost, you know, off to the side, but right next to the stage. And so this giant, just a lovely guy, big hulk of a man, and he's just ripping it. And I'm like, God, he reminds you of like Freddie King, Albert King, and just you could see, he's just a gentleman, very friendly, shook everybody's hand, talked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I asked him about his guitar. And then 3 weeks later, I had just heard of this guy. So in that 3 week period of time, I bought his like whole catalog.
Yeah.
I read an article. He walks off the plane in Atlanta, drops dead.
Yep.
It's just tragic, man. What was he like and how did you get hooked up with him?
Mike was the first artist who ever played our guitars.
Wow.
Mike had, I'm a blues guy. You know, that's kind of it's always been my wheelhouse. And, Mike, I kind of actively pursued. I'm not snobby, but I'm a little snobby. There's not a lot of current new guys in the blues scene that I really love. Mike was one of those ones that just immediately blew me away. You know, I was a fan for a long time. And, you know, when I got into doing the business and we started doing the Daylighter, I was like, you know, I just have this feeling this is going to be a guitar that would work for him. And so I kind of tracked him down and I, you know, ended up and out here, there's two places like that. There's one in Santa Cruz called Moe's Alley. And then you usually go from there to Biscuits and Blues in San Francisco. So everybody kind of makes the same loop. Mm. And so I ended up meeting up with him in Santa Cruz because, A, who would refuse to turn down a trip to go to the beach? And so it kind of worked out. And I brought him guitar. I want to say it was like Daylighter number 4, which was by all accounts, a terrible guitar compared to what we make now. But it, okay, in all fairness, it was a tremendous playing, tremendous sounding guitar, but we've obviously improved a lot on fit and finish since then. But Mike really ended up falling in love with it, and we ended up falling in love with Mike. You're, I mean, he was. He's just the nicest. The whole band was. The Chuck and Wayne and all those guys are just, yeah, they're all the nicest. They were just family for us immediately. And so we became really good friends. And then Mike played that guitar for a long time before we got his actual, the one that's on the Iron Man cover.
Yeah, that's on the cover of Iron Man,
yeah. Yeah, so before we got that one done, he played that one for a long time. And they would come through that same circle about every year. So we get to see him like once a year. And every time we saw him, you know, Wayne would be like, man, all these people are always trying to give Mike guitars. And he just turns them down. He loves that guitar of yours, which meant a lot to us. Yeah. And Mike was, I mean, he was, okay, I have a lot of artists we work with. There's maybe three that are like this, but Mike was the original. Mike was a genuine friend. Yeah. Like, he was genuinely, he'd, you know, call me up when he'd found something on the road that he had to tell me about, you know, I found this, you know, I don't even remember what they were, but, you know, he'd find some crazy thing to nerd out about on it, you know, and just call to see how you were doing. And it seemed like Mike would have telepathy when I would just have just a shit day at the shop, you know, something go wrong, or we'd be dealing with a customer that was being difficult or whatever. It was like somehow Mike would know, and he would just call you out of the blue and be like, and it'd cheer you up. Wow. Remind you that you're not sucking at this, you know?
Yeah.
And, so we built, so Mike was primarily known for playing Flying V's before he played our stuff.
Uh-huh.
He played a lot of Flying V's, and Mike caught wind that I had built a Flying V for myself just for fun. Because everybody's got to have a Flying V for like 12 minutes. Like, that seems to be, you know, you buy it, you play like one gig, you know, jam night with it, and you're like, all right, that's cool.
Yeah.
Sell it. I've had enough. And so we built one for Mike, and this is the worst part of the story, though. So we built it for him, and I talked to Mike the night before he got on the plane to come home. He was in Italy. He was coming home from there, and we were going to see him the next week and give him his Flying V when he was coming out to the West Coast. So. And on top of that, it was like, I'm pretty certain that he was coming to Moe's Alley on my birthday, and we were gonna, you know, it was like, oh, wow. This whole
so
thing was coming together.
Out. Yeah, yeah.
Yep. And we were coming home. It was over Memorial Day weekend, and coming home from my parents' place. They have a cabin up in the foothills, and I got a message from one of the guys that works for me, and that was it. And I just lost it. And it was so the really bummer part was for me was when I talked to him before he left. He was dying to see his Flying V, and I was like, no, nope, you're not going to see it until I can give it to you in person. And which, you know, who knew that was how it was going to go?
Of course.
You know, yeah. But yeah, he just, man, that was just a heartbreak for us. That was genuinely losing a friend for me.
Sorry.
You know, and it was tough because it was, you know, I felt bad when, you know, we wanted to get out for the memorial and everything. And it was just, we just couldn't make it happen. It was just bad timing on our end. And, unfortunate joys of self-employment. It seems like whenever you need to do something like that in a hurry is when you just wrote the, you know, $10,000 tax bill and have nothing left after it.
Yeah, sure.
And, but his, Bobby, his wife, we still stay in touch with her. She has all the guitars, and there's a couple people that were in kind of his circle that she's let with our permission, his guitars out. So they still get played.
Okay.
Which is really cool. But yeah, he was a great guy. You know, he put us on the map, and even if he hadn't put us on the map, he's still probably one of the favorite guys that we ever worked with.
And I agree with you 100%. He's one of the few. I mean, there's nobody else today that really does it for me. And
yeah,
you know, we don't have to name names. We could talk afterwards. But, I mean, the guys that they're touting, I'm like, no.
I'm very fortunate. The two guys that I really like in the scene. Well, there's a bunch that I like, but the ones who I'm lucky to be friends with, Mike and Matt Schofield, is another one that I'm a genuinely big fan of, and he's a genuinely good friend of ours.
Matt Schofield, I don't know him. I'll have to check him out.
Matt's really great. And there's a ton of guys, and it's hard to say that without making somebody feel bad that, oh, Hogan didn't mention me. And there's a lot that I like. I mean, there's these two brothers, the Peterson brothers, who I met through Mike. Who were like,
young
I think
kids?
It might be Yeah, they might be 21 now. Yeah. And they're both really good.
One plays bass, one plays guitar, I think. Yeah,
yep. He plays a cower.
I read about them in Living Blues magazine, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they're really good. But Mike was the guy. I was like, this is the guy.
Yeah, for sure. So. Great voice, great soul, great songwriter, and just great blues artist. So
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I'm sorry that, for your loss. And
I appreciate that.
I was really saddened when I heard. I was, I had goosebumps when you were talking. So,
Yeah.
Let's talk about your story. Where are you originally from, Doug, and where'd you grow up?
I'm here from Sacramento, same place I'm still at now, and from a town specifically called Elk Grove, which is just you can't tell where Elk Grove starts and stops and Sacramento begins. It's basically the same town, but just right in the valley of Northern California. So,
what kind of childhood did you have?
It's good. My parents are self-employed, so I grew up in a self. I unfortunately firsthand knew all the pitfalls of self-employment, and was adamant that I was never going to be self-employed. And here I am.
what did your folks do?
My dad's a cabinet maker. He used to work on cars, and he was a parts manager for Stockton Dotson at the time, and got into woodworking as a hobby, and then just kind of switched. Just got tired of working for other people, and. The upside to self-employment is when you deal with a jerk, you can tell them that they're a jerk. The downside is you don't get paid.
Yeah.
but sometimes the satisfaction is worth it.
Oh, yeah.
And at least it's a double-edged sword. But, I always feel bad for people that – so the one thing about being self-employed for me is if you know how to hustle and you work hard, you can usually make it work. And you're not – Yeah, and you're not dependent on this idea that you can be 3 months away from retirement and you get the axe. If the business fails, it's not always your fault, but a lot of the times it is.
Right.
Sometimes it's bad luck or whatever, but, I kind of got to that point where I was working towards my teaching credential, and my wife was ahead of me on hers, and so I went back to work when we bought our house, and so she could finish up, and then we were going to trade. And it's right when I started building guitars, and I wouldn't trade it. I as stressful as it is to be self-employed, I like that freedom of it.
Right.
And my wife loves it too when, we have to meet the landscaper at her house or the dishwasher repair guy or whatever, or the kid's sick, and it's not a big deal if I have to miss work for a day.
Yeah, sure. Especially when you have young kids like you do. What does your mom do? You said dad was a
cabinet. She was a pretty much stay-at-home mom, but my mom, she had jobs before we were born, but once we were born, and this is, they lived in the Bay Area. They came from Mountain View, Palo Alto area, and they moved to Sacramento because even in 1980, you couldn't afford Palo Alto.
Wow.
But, which is insane now. But they, that was one of the perks of moving here was that she could, and the business was relatively stable enough that she could afford to stay home. But my mom was big into art and craft stuff, so she was always involved. Whatever school I was at, she was involved at. There's like a local – it's not a county fair, but it's kind of a county fair for our town. And she always ran the art exhibits for that and put on a bunch of things and worked at craft fairs. And the downside was Elk Grove at the time was a pretty small town. And so everybody in town knew my mom, which we couldn't get away with anything.
I thought she was smoking something.
Oh, yeah. She just, and the worst was when I how it is until you hit puberty, pick up the phone and, oh, hi, Rita. I'm like, no, it's Doug. So they could not get away with it. Everyone thought I was her on the phone anyway. But she was always, both my parents are very creative people So I learned to woodwork. I learned to work on cars for my dad and build things. And I probably picked up a little bit of an eye for things between the both of them. My mom's arts thing is not my end of the spectrum, but, that's kind of, I didn't lose you there, did I? Sorry.
No, you're good, man.
Okay. Had a interrupting call there, we did that. But I think part of it too is, because she did the art exhibit and that kind of stuff, and some of that was along with painting and that kind of stuff. But there was always furniture and or woodworking things, and that was always the thing that caught my eye the most. I'm sure that, you know, has resulted in where I'm at now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You got the design aesthetic and the woodworking. So it's like,
It is tough after 20 years of building cabinets with my dad, though. I just want to make right angle things. it takes a long time to design a guitar. It's not just a bow diddly square.
Hey, flying V. There you go.
Yeah, exactly.
So you opened the shop in 2005. What prompted that? Like, what was the origination of that?
I was working for my dad. You know, I grew up doing the cabinet business with him. We've been in, let's see if I can remember this right. Started in the garage when I was 4. And then we had the Lodi shop and then 3 shops. I think this is our fourth or fifth shop, technically. And we moved into this building in 01 from around the corner where we outgrew that spot. But I've always worked here. I had the choice between summer school and going to the shop because, in my mom's words, there's no way you kids are going to spend all summer at home. Okay. And so my brother went to summer school, and I went to the shop because we couldn't be at the same place.
Right.
And I just, you know, I grew up doing that. So honestly, the guitar thing started as just a hobby. I was just building guitars for fun. Eventually, it was one of those things that my brain kind of connected that I could, you know, oh, I've been working with wood forever, you know, maybe and I've been playing guitar for a long time. Maybe I should try building a guitar.
Right.
And so I did, and made just enough learner mistakes on that one to move on to the next one, and on to the next one, and on to the next one. And then, so I kind of went through the arc everybody does. I was kind of making strats and tellies and, you know, buying necks. And then I started making my own necks, and then I made what became the Banshee. I made a Firebird copy, essentially, because it was, you know, before the business, and I wanted to. And, you know, I did that, and that was the first full scratch build I ever did. And then I designed the Daylighter, or what became the Daylighter, and which was really just I wanted a Jazzmaster meets Les Paul mix-up. And
just looking at them on your website now.
Sure. And so I designed that, and that was right when the recession hit. And there was no cabinet work to do. So I was kind of coming to the shop just to build guitars because what else am I going to do with my time?
Right.
And people started buying them, and I was really adamant that I was not going to take a hobby and turn it into a business again and and ruin my hobby again. And but I ended up doing it anyway. And really what sealed the deal is I started meeting people in the industry that were – I didn't know there was a boutique guitar industry. You know, I didn't know. I mean, I really didn't even read, like, you know, when I was 16, I probably read Guitar Player and Guitar World pretty religiously. But by the time I was in my 20s, it's not that I didn't care. It's just guitar was something I would play for fun, and I had other hobbies, and I just kind of did that. And then, so I didn't know, you know, and even then, I don't know if Guitar World or Guitar Player really covered boutique industry back in the, you know, mid 2000s, you know, late to late 2000s, if that was even something that they were talking much about. But I just started building as a hobby, and I was on a couple of the you know, like Project Guitar forums and stuff. And then I started meeting people like Nick Huber and Yuho Vercongus and all these other builders. I was like, oh, I didn't know there was a thing to this that much. And they were very supportive of what I was doing. And so I kind of jumped in full time. You know,
it's interesting. I've interviewed, 3 or 4 builders at this point, and you guys are a real supportive community.
Very much, yeah. Very much so. At least the electric side. Now, the acoustic side is too, and I've met a lot of them, and there's maybe a little bit of Jets versus the Sharks, you know.
You're too young to know that. How the hell do you even know that?
I'm a nerd. You know, I there's a little bit of that between the two sides, the electric right. side and the electric side. But generally, in my experience on the electric side, as long as you're doing original work, you're in the club. Yeah. And you're not, you know, like I've had people ask me, like, oh, isn't there so much competition? I'm like, there is no competition, really. It's competition if you build strats or tellies, absolutely. But I'm the only guy who makes Super Chief. I'm the only guy who makes my Daylighter. I'm the only guy who makes, you know. And if you like it, you're gonna buy it from me. And if you don't like it, nothing I'm gonna do is gonna change that for you. You're not gonna buy it
anyway. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you're gonna buy somebody. You're gonna buy Huber. you know, and like what drove that home to me is the first guitar show I ever did. You know, I'd be between, you know, it was in Montreal, and I was between, you know, in a row of all these guys. It was a boutique only event, and you'd watch people walk down and they would stop at my table and they would walk past two people that I'm like, those things are really rad. Why aren't you looking at theirs? And then vice versa, they'd walk right past me and they'd go look at somebody else's stuff. And it's like, so, and that's kind of when I realized, like, if you're doing your own work, then you're, you know, I don't know that there's really ever going to be another PRS or another Bob Taylor. That's probably not where the market's going to go. And that's great. I'm glad that's not where it's going. And, you know, maybe we're all doomed to sell 100 guitars a year, and that's going to be, you know, that's the boutique industry, that there'll be 10,000 of us selling 100 a year.
I don't think
100
so.
Of us selling 10,000 a year.
No, I don't think that's possible, because you're going to have, you know, the whole capitalism is going to say,
yeah,
you know, it's going to weed, you know, you're going to have some that are more popular than others. It's
yeah,
it's
not, no, absolutely. But what I mean more is, you know, not all of us are in this to become the next, we're going to build 100 guitars a day company.
Sure, sure.
You know, if I build 100 cowers a year, and I can make ends meet, that's great. Yeah, if yeah. you know, if we can sell 200 a year, that's even better. Sure. If we, you know, as long as we can keep the ends, you know, keep the bills paid and the lights on, I'm generally pretty happy.
Sure.
So it works out pretty well. And yeah, I mean, everybody shares. I've had so much great advice from people over the years in this business. I've probably given out a lot of terrible advice as well.
But it wasn't on purpose.
Yeah, people dumb enough to ask me what I think, and I'm like, I don't know if you want should, you know, ask me twice a year and see if my answer is the same six months later.
Right. I hear you, man. Let's talk about some of your models. Mm-hmm. You have five different models. You got the Arcturus, the Banshee, the Daylighter, Starliner, mm-hmm. and the Super Chief. And everybody listening,
yep.
you can find this on Kauer Guitars. It's Kauer Guitars.com. So give me the Cliff Notes version of the starting
sure.
with the Arcturus, I guess.
So we there's actually – we just refined the website this year. We dropped – I think we had like 20 models at its peak.
Oh, wow.
But basically what you described is the families. Mm. So – it started with Daylighter, so there was like I kind of think of it as coach building meets a lack of talent. We'll milk one design pretty heavily. And then so like for the first few years, we built just Daylighter and Banshee, really. And so Daylighter was like, there was a carved top and there was a semi-hollow version and a flat top version and a junior version. And then we've kind of pared it down to what's just been the most popular the last year or two. Daylighter generally is our offset body meets Les Paul. So it's a Jazzmaster-ish shape, but it's, you know, Gibson scale, you know, humbuckers, P90s, that kind of 10 of the spectrum. And then Arcturus is the bolt-on version, which is still Daylighter shape, you know, Jazzmaster shape, but it's more Fender flavored. So it's the Fender 25.5 scale. They usually have the Mastery trim, kind of R spin on a to me, what's a more functional Jazzmaster, essentially, or a Jazzmaster flavored thing with, and you can still do it with humbuckers and P90s, but we were doing wide ranges and Charlie Christians and all kinds of other cool pickup options for those. Starliner is really my favorite series that we make. It's 100% my design. You know, it's a from the ground up, total scratch design. And it started as kind of a, you know, what's a Les Paul that solves all the problems with a Les Paul for me? And I just didn't want to make a Les Paul copy. I wanted to make something original. And you know, obviously, when I say original, I'm threading the needle in, you know, historic terms. There are guys who are truly original. We're not on the far end of the spectrum. But we wanted something that was kind of familiar, yet kind of, you know, stood on its own two legs. And so that was Starliner. So that started off as a carved top, you know, Les Paul type thing. And now the last couple of years, it's been all the flat tops that have been very popular for us. So we're mostly, I think, just offering the Starliner Express, which is a flat top, you know, two pickup, you know, big kind of, you know, one piece pick guard type thing. And then the Super Chief, which is brand new, is really a scaled up Starliner. So it's a 15.5 inch wide semi-hollow version of Starliner, which I'm thoroughly thrilled with. I'm so happy with that guitar. We it's been in my head for a long time, and it just, we do a big open house every year at our shop in June called Cowerfest, and so I think like right at the end of April or first of May, I just came in one morning and just it appeared. Like I drew it all, programmed it, everything came out the way I wanted it to come out, and we managed to get the first five or six up. I think we got seven of them up and done for Cowerfest, like June 10th, so in like 5 weeks, which was real fast for us, for that to come together. And they're tremendous. I love that guitar.
What do they sound? They're semi-hollow body, so like
they're kind of a middle ground between their interior volume wise, they're on par with a 335. So they're kind of in that spectrum, but it's a Spanish mahogany core, and it's a center block, but the block is hollowed out in a way that it's a cross between a 335 center block and almost like Gretsch trestle bracing. Like it's in right between. So it's more open than the 335 is naturally. It still does the, if you want to play, Rush on it, it will do Rush. It'll do Alex Lifeson 335 stuff or, Clapton Creamier stuff, but it's got kind of its own voice. And it also, with the combination of the bracing, it's kind of like a more comfortable 6120 to play if you do it with the TV Jones pickups. It's tremendous. There's one good demo that we got up with. It's such a new model for us that we don't have a lot up there yet.
The Super Chief. Bigsby Vibrato Wolftone Cowerbuckers.
Yep.
Yeah, I see him.
And that's actually my personal Super Chief. Yeah, it's the Super Chief number one. And it's killer. I love that guitar.
What's it called? This is like an embarrassing question because I'm just having a brain fart. What's it called? Like a lot of your... it sort of looks like waves of like colors on it. Here, let me describe this.
Like a sunburst or a...
No. If I could pick more vague words, it couldn't be possible.
Fair enough.
It's like, okay, so on the Starliner, the back of the Starliner, it's like coated or...
Where it's kind of like a... It's got like two-tone color going there.
It's like ocean waves.
Yeah.
What is that called?
Yeah. So that's done. We have a generic name. It's our TV finishes. So the way that finish is done is you apply one color directly to the wood, and then you spray a sealer coat, and then you apply a contrasting colored grain filler, and then you rub that in, and that just stays behind in the grain of the wood. So it's very dependent on the piece of wood. So like we do one, the one we're known for, we call Starry Night. So it's black with blue grain filler. And
it's gorgeous.
Yep.
Man.
Yeah, I love that fish. That's been a very, very, very popular one. Black with white filler, which is kind of what I think I'm looking at the same picture you're looking at now.
Like the fourth or fifth one on the
Starliner page. Yeah. Yep. So we call that TV black. That fish, and even Starry Night, we didn't invent this, but so like Gibson called that dog hair finish, or Collins calls it dog hair. Gibson, yeah, I think they both still call it dog hair, but it's...
Gibson calls it something else. Hold on a minute. Let me show you. You have another guitar.
Silver Fox. The Epiphone Silver Fox was basically the same idea.
Well, look at your Dayliner page, just the page with the Dayliner. All three of the first two guitars, on the one on the left in the middle, have that same...
Sure. So the top on those is the PRS-style Dye and Sandback. So that's just quilted maple.
Quilted. Or, that's the word I couldn't think of, man.
Yeah, or a real heavily flamed maple.
Right.
It's
really pretty.
Thank you. Yeah, we do that finish from time to time. You know, it's funny. It kind of comes and goes, not to pardon the pun, in waves for us. The last couple years especially, we have done very little of the fancy wood finishes. When we've done them, they haven't been nearly as popular. It's been... a lot of like the more bold solid color finishes from us, or kind of the art deco-y retro look.
Yeah, well, I was going to say your colors. Yeah. I can understand that because the colors of the guitars themselves are very cool. They're like,
well, thank you.
Sort of retro, like you got the, I don't know what that green is called, and it's
sure.
You know, I don't,
Verde and Chiaro.
Okay, yeah, okay, of course.
It's Italian for light green. And it's on the Fiat 500. That's where that color comes from.
It's cool as shit. And then you got the blue. They're kind of retro-y vintage colors. So like,
sure.
if you have that guitar, you're not going to want to get the finish on it.
Yeah. It's been fun. One of the nicest things about, so we don't spray any lacquer because we're in California. And the nicest thing about that is because we spray a urethane finish, that's really the automotive standard for the last, 30 years, 40 years of paint. Mm. So, I mean, like a lot of times, a lot of our colors be like, I'll just be driving down the street and I'll be like, oh man, that new blue on that new Camaro, that's a great color. The guitar would look good in that color. And, call up my paint supplier and find the paint code and they send me a can of it. So we get a lot of inspiration in that regard. And it comes from being a nerdy car guy too.
Like the Starliner, that green, that's not the light green. What is that's like an, what do they call that? Like
that one is, it's called Caddy Green. So yeah, it's a vintage Gretsch color.
Yeah. It's vintage, but it's really freaking cool.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I love that one. And we have some finishes that we've kind of known for that I would love to take credit for, but they were customer ideas to start with. That blue gray Starliner combo that's on the website, that was a customer, and that's a brilliant. He kind of pitched the idea, and we found the two colors that would complement well, and that's been one of my favorite finishes too. We've got a bunch of stuff done in that, so it's been fun. I call it slow forming ADD. Like I don't have ADD in regards of like it doesn't keep me from getting work done. But I get bored kind of easily. Mm. I don't like doing a lot of repetitive finishes. I like to kind of make, there's some combos that are very popular for us, but even like the really popular combos, there's maybe less than a dozen of those guitars in that same kind of specific combinations. Mm. We like to kind of mix it up, and it's probably why there's like literally like 250 color paint choices here now, right. Or cans of paint. There's so many cans of paint. They get used like twice.
Yeah, but it keeps. You're a custom builder, so that's the nature of your business. You're not cranking out assembly line stuff. I mean, that's what you do. So it's. I would imagine that's. And plus, everybody wants. If you're buying a custom guitar, there's the one-off thing where I saw my buddy playing a Cowher and I got to have the same thing. But for the most part, everybody's going to say. Even my son, when I was going to get a guitar, and he's like, "Oh, why don't you get it with all these like colors?" I'm like, "But I." Just like red.
Well, I think that's a lot of. I think that's a lot of the appeal. I mean, we sell to me. The entire boutique industry for me is really boils down to if I never saw another Strat, Tele, or Les Paul in my life, I'd be totally okay with that. I kind of like, and I know that a lot of my customers like that. They know that if they bought a Cowher, they're not likely to run across another Cowher like that. Maybe ever, but they're certainly not going to go out to the jam night and be like, oh yeah, there's 9 Cowhers here. It's always like, there's 25 Telecasters and Strats and you have the one thing nobody else has. And, without it sounding snobby, but that's my favorite part of it. I like having the thing nobody else has.
Well, let's talk about that. Cause I once talked to a boutique guitar manufacturer and he said, I don't know how we got on the topic, but he basically said you can't sell anything unless it resembles a Strat, a Tele, or a Les Paul.
It's really hard.
Now, okay, so you've gone out, like, this is like massive big balls because you don't, your guitars don't resemble any of those. But they don't, but they're not wacky, like, fucking space patterns, but sometimes you see like some.
Oh no, I know what you mean. Yeah, it's like a
nice guitar, a retro guitar, sort of.
There's maybe 2 degrees of latitude that you can get. Yeah. It seems like you can, and in the short run, okay. So I have this conversation with people a lot that get they ask me what when they're starting off in the business, and the reality is absolutely it's way easier to sell a Strat, Telecaster, or Les Paul in the short run. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about my mind. And there's some guys who have come into it very smartly and become the guy for that. And that's great. The problem is for 99% of them is as soon as the next guy comes along, you're no longer the guy. Right. Daylighter has familiar roots. Banshee obviously started as a Firebird copy, and that was our if we're gonna make something that's not really 100% original, let's at least make something quirky, let's make the best version of the Firebird that anybody could make. And then the post C and lawsuit version, the version we currently make, is the version I've always wanted to make. And that's the best Firebird style guitar on the planet. And I hate saying that because I don't want to sound like I'm an arrogant prick about it. I know it is. You know, I'm the only guy who has Gibson's blessing on it. We're the only people who make that guitar as a true neck through, but we've made that thing in a way that is much more survivable than any Firebird ever was. It's a much better guitar all around. So at least I feel like if we're going to do something that's not totally original-ish, we've done the best version of it we can.
Sure.
But in the long run, yeah, if you don't have original work and you're not good at original work, it's really hard. It's much harder to get to the point where people buy them.
You just hit the nail on the head. If you don't have original work and it's not good, you're not good at the original work. And I think I think to be good at this, you have to be a bit of an artist.
Sure.
You know, I don't think this is – I think your job is, you know, 50% guitar builder, 50%, you know, art director to some extent.
Yeah.
Because you can't sell shitty artwork, and you can't sell shitty artwork on a guitar either.
Yeah. You have to be stubborn about it too, though. Like we – okay, I'm a Simpsons fanatic, so I'm sure – it was inevitable that I'm going to make a Simpsons analogy here, but if you leave it up to the internet, you would end up designing the Homer every time.
Correct.
That, you know, and I get people all the time, you know, oh, you know, I really like Starlander, but I don't like the Pickguard. I really like this, but I don't like that. I'm like, well, I don't want to be an asshole, but tough shit, because I like it. You know, and I'm designing this for me. Obviously, I want people to buy it, but there, it's not like I slapped this thing together. There's a reason everything is the way it is, and it's to appease what I wanted. And if you don't like it, you know what? I'm not taking it personally. I get it. I have friends in the business who I love dearly, and I love their work, and they'll never be guitars that I would own. They're not my wheelhouse, but I love what they do. You know, Paris, also because I do this for a living and I have no discretionary income. but, you know, I have intentional design choices. And, you know, like, you know, oh, I would totally – Starliner's that way. When we brought the new Pickguard out, but, oh, I would buy it if the Pickguard was round and it followed the body better. I'm like, yeah, but then it would look like everybody else's guitar. I like to contrast the Pickguard with the body.
And
so it's one of those things that, you know you know, you don't have to like Edward Hopper's paintings. I do. You know, that's if you like Picasso more, I'm not going to say that anybody's right or wrong. You know, this is just what I like to do. And so that's the tough thing. You have to be kind of good at original work, and you have to be willing to stand by it long enough for it to basically really to beat it into people's consciousness. You know, this is the way it's going to be, and make that recognizable from a distance of your product.
Your knobs are they have like an arrow on them. They're really cool. What is that?
Those are just actually literally the Gretsch pointer knobs. So whenever we do a TV Jones kind of thing, we tend to do the Gretsch trim on it. So those are theirs. Though I finally found a knob that's basically the same look minus the arrow. But I kind of like the arrow. The arrow's pretty bad.
I like the arrow too, man. Hey, so let's talk about Titan guitars now, because that's your newest line and it's doing real well. So let's talk about that's at Titan Guitars, guys, if you're listening.
Yeah, so Titan is a 3-year project that just came out this year. The reality is, I think guitar players nowadays take it for granted. not for rock. No, it's not. We're not going with that pun. There's a lot of amazing guitars out there now for $1,000 or less. And
I wouldn't say amazing.
Well, okay, let's rephrase this differently. There's a big difference today about $1,000 guitar that you could buy for today, even from overseas, compared to even 10 years ago. 10 years ago, anything under $1,000 was automatically junk. Now there's a lot of stuff that's in the, you know, Reverend, you know, kind of the nicer Korean, even some of the Chinese stuff like Eastman has kind of gotten really good. Though Eastman's expensive.
They're not cheap at all.
Yeah. So, I think people tend to, who are not hip to what boutique guitars are supposed to be, tend to bitch about the prices of boutique guitars. That, you know, oh, it's outrageous that that Jazzmaster-ish thing you make is $2,900. And then I'm like, yeah, but in all fairness, in 1959, a Jazzmaster adjusted for inflation to today's dollars cost $3,100.
Wait a minute, so so you really run across people that they want a custom guitar and they want to pay like what they'd go down to Guitar Center and buy a new Strat on sale for?
Sort of. I think there's a lot of people out there who don't understand why a shop that makes 80 guitars a year charges what they charge.
Let them sit for it. And you should say, listen, sit. Here's a slab of wood. We're going to start a new guitar day one. And you tell me what it's worth.
Oh, yeah. No, that, believe me, there's been guys that have come to the shop and they have no idea how much work goes into it. And in all fairness, I'm not going to sit around and say my guitars are cheap. They're not, by any stretch. They're genuinely expensive.
They're custom guitars.
Yeah. No, and so most of the time, that's not really one of our customers complaining.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, of the 70,000 people who follow us online, a percentage is going to complain. But what I wanted to do with Titan was we kind of started with this idea. One of my guys who works for me is like, man, if we could just make guitars for $1,000, we could sell them so much. And I'm like, and that's not true because one, it's very difficult to make a guitar in our shop for $1,000. And two, it's actually a much harder market to sell in than the $4,000 guitars we make. Like, it's much harder. It's competitive and it's economies of scale. No, that's not true. It is for us, but what it is if $1,000 is your budget to buy a guitar, $1,000 is a huge sum of money for you. If $5,000 for a guitar doesn't make you blink twice, the money doesn't matter to you.
Right.
And so it's tough. So for years, every time we've tried to do something at like even $1,900, it's just crashed and burned every time. It's failed miserably. We end up jacking the price immediately. I kept turning them down, and I kept turning them down, and then I spent the day with Bob Taylor, and I came back from that. I was like, you know, they have an entire factory.
Bob Taylor from?
Taylor Guitars. Okay, yeah. We get to do this kind of conference with him and a few other small builders and I. It was great.
So you guys have like a mastermind group that meets periodically?
Every once in a while, yeah.
That's really cool.
So I came back from that, and I was like, you know, they have an entire factory dedicated to just building their two cheapest guitars. Like, that's what it takes to do that. But I was like, but let's have a thought experiment. So we started with like, okay, well, maybe we'll – I don't want to make an import. I don't want to do that. There doesn't need to be another import guitar. You know, there's plenty of that. You know, I want to keep it made here in the U.S. But maybe we won't make the bodies. So we won't make the necks. We won't paint them. It'll just be our design, and we'll put them together. And I was like, nah, that's – you know. And we went through all of these variations, and over the next 2 years, other pieces of the puzzle in the shop clicked into place. We switched from chemical cure to UV cure finishes, where we cut our finish time down from weeks to days to hours in some regards. And that was a mandated, huge piece of the puzzle.
Was that something mandated?
No, mostly it was just we kind of experimented with it, and it was such an obvious improvement over what we were doing that it was a no-brainer. So we bought it for Tower and Titan. It happened to benefit. It happened to be the big piece of the puzzle for Titan to make the price work. And ultimately,
where'd you get that idea from? If you don't mind me asking,
Yeah, Taylor's been using UV for a long time, and Anderson and Sur and a bunch of companies, and you know, it's something we've known about for a long time. But the cost of emission is very high, so we managed to luck into like a handheld lamp. Relatively cheap was a good way to see if this was going to work for us or not. And within a day, we're like, yeah, this is a no-brainer. You know, it's just instead of spending days waiting for paint to dry, you spend minutes waiting for it to dry. So we bought a big automated booth and you know, for the finish, you know, to cure the finishes. And so that came together. And then, like, then I went crazy and it was like, well, once we kind of got the design worked out, I was like, well, if I take out two more pickguard screws, it'll save me $20 over the course of, like, we went crazy on it. And, there were certain things I was willing to trade on and certain things else. And what finally we came up with was, is we do the bodies in house. We paint, we make the bodies and paint them. Grover Jackson in LA, Jackson Guitars, or JG2 Guitars now, he makes the necks for us because, while we could make the necks here, we don't have the people and the support sales at the at when we started here to hire enough people to make that kind of volume of necks. And really, Grover made the necks exactly to our specs. And I hate to say it, I think they're better than we can make them. They're really good.
but if they if you don't have the, you know, it's like saying, well, if I call a roofer here, he could do the roof better than I can. I mean, it's have something that you don't have in economy.
Well, we
scale
have
and
we have all the same equipment, except for he's got a Plex machine. But, you know, he's got, for him, it's not a big deal. They're running so much business that running a batch of necks for them, it's kind of, he's doing our necks the same way we're doing Titan bodies. When we have a slow couple days at the shop for paint, especially, because no matter how hard we try, you know, it always ebbs and flows a little bit. We try to paint 3 hours a week, but some weeks we paint three, and some weeks you have to repaint one of them, and, you know, or we're waiting on truss rods. And so there's a week where there's kind of an opening in the booth. Tyler, my one of my guys who paints with me, we'll just put a bunch of Titans in the booth. We'll paint Titans for a few days. And so we can kind of stay ahead of demand by just doing those in the gaps in the schedule. But we couldn't do necks and bodies and paint and at that price point.
Right.
And so it was cheaper to pay for the necks than to pay to have people work on them for us. And then they're really good necks. So we still feel like we still do 80% of the work. So it still feels like it's, you know, a good Cower product. But because we don't do 100% of the work, we don't call it a Cower. It's, you know, that's why it's under a different brand name. It's a tremendous guitar.
I didn't – what you just said, that's like I'm not blowing smoke up your ass, but that's
sure.
As to your authenticity, man.
Well, I appreciate that. And I did it for a couple of reasons. You know, one, because we don't do it on all house, you know, that was one of the – but it was also – you know, I also have to do this in a way that justifies, well, why is it the guitar that you make that's $1,300, and then why do you make a guitar that's Cower start at $3,000? And it's like, we don't do Titan completely in-house, and there's only one body for Titan. There's only one neck profile. There's only four color choices. There's pickup and pickguard choices, and that's about it.
It's more like a modded guitar, not a custom guitar.
Yeah.
Guitar within – you know, it's like three from column A, two from column B. You pick which ones you want. Okay,
yep.
I get you.
Yeah, and so it, but it's turned out to be what I've been. So I'm hugely proud of it from a technical accomplishment to do what we're doing in a 3-man shop at a price point that's profitable for us to sustain it, and to be at the same price point. Actually, I think I'm less than an American Telecaster now. It's $12.99 with Seymour Duncan's in
Man,
it.
Man, I think
standard.
Okay, right. So I think Tellys and Strats are like $14.99.
Yep,
and not with Seymour Duncan's in them.
Yep.
No.
Yep.
So
we have Goto locking tuners and Emerson cut, like all the same hardware we would use without even feeling. We would use the tuners or Goto's, and we use hip shots on Cower. But honestly, quality wise, I think they're on par with each other. I'd use the Goto's with no problem on Cower. Like there is not any trade-off on the hardware. We really tried to do it with simply just how do we make this thing, how do we get it on our end as efficient as possible without, you know.
Been good.
Yeah, it's been great. It's done really well for us, and I've been playing. I never have time to play in bands, and so like maybe once in a few months I'll go out and hit jam night, you know, and mostly whenever I get a new model I want to go out and play it. But my entire wife's family, you know, and it's how I met my wife. They've all played in bands for years, and we're playing for a birthday party for a friend. So it's like, so the first time in a long time we've rehearsed in the last couple nights, and I've brought my Super Chief, man. And I brought my Titan, and I have literally not picked up my Super Chief once. I've played my Titan the entire time. It's just a great guitar.
What does it sound like? Is there audio? Okay, there's videos here too.
Yeah, so the video of the blue one is actually literally my Titan. So one of the things about Titan is because it's a big universal route under the pickguard, we have a standard version of Titan now with a couple of combinations. But like we've done all kinds of weird pickup combos, and mine's not even weird. Mine's just a Lawler Jelly J Street in the bridge and a Imperial on the neck, a humbucker, and it's just a great guitar. Like it's funny. It's just the controls are right where they're supposed to be. The neck is fantastic feeling. Every single thing on that guitar is, it's like a I don't know. It's like getting in a car for the first time, and every knob, switch, and gear, everything is right where it should be. Like it's, and then you get into something else, and you're like, this car might be cooler, but there's that trade off of like, well, it would be a lot more sense if this switch was over here, and like the, you know, it's right. It's something about Titan is just, it's, and it's developed a really rabid following. Like my big fear with Titan was because it's. Excuse me. It's already so reasonably priced that they would get bought up, and this is what would happen every time we did an entry level price guitar. We'd have a big run of them for about 6 months. We'd sell a whole bunch for a year, and then they would all end up used at the same time. And there's more used Cowers for sale right now than I think there's one Titan on Reverb. Like it's amazing to me that they've really not only. Like people have embraced what they are, they've kept them, and I think they keep them at a higher rate than they keep Cowers. Honestly,
it's got the old school. I'm noticing the old school bridge there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a Tele half bridge. We did the we tried to keep it flexible, so we used the top loading Tele half bridge because then you could also do a Bigsby or a Mastery option, and it doesn't change the body at all. Besides mounting the Bigsby. You know, anything that we could do to keep from having to make two kinds of bodies. If we have to, and that's the rule of thumb. Like if we have to make two kinds of necks, then we can't do it with Titan. Yeah, we can't do it at that price point. That's if we have to make two kinds of bodies, we can't do it at that price point.
I think you have to have, and I give you credit because, a lot of guys, and this is what I'm seeing in the guys I'm interviewing, the guys that think like you. They are business people.
Sure.
And you have to be a business person whether you like it or not
to
survive in your industry.
Oh, absolutely. It's a business first. And Titan too, Cowher has enough following now. I mean, Cowher's got like 65,000 Instagram followers alone, right? Like we're kind of at the point now with that where I feel like we could bring Titan out. If we had tried 3 or 4 years ago, I don't think it would have gone over as well. But now, and ironically, now we're starting to see Titan kind of separate and stand on its own feet, where we're getting, you know, a really rabid following among people who've never heard of Cowher, who heard of Titan first.
So you're getting Cowher customers.
Yeah, that's happened a bit. I have a lot of Cowher owners that buy Titans to have as like I'm doing, like my go out and play, beater workhorse guitar. And I think too is, the price point Cowers are at, and I'm very thankful that a lot of them go out and get played, but they also, a lot of them go out and get hung on the wall, I think, realistically. But with Titan, we've seen way more people playing Titan. Like, as a brand, you want to get people involved, but as a builder, you get that satisfaction of knowing people are playing your guitars. So it always kind of bums you out when you sell a guitar and like you never hear from the person again, which is certainly better than getting an angry email. But it's always a little sad when like you kind of never see that guitar again. Yeah, but when we've really noticed it with Titan, maybe because Titan has a little bit younger age group anyway, we're seeing Titans that we've sold popping up on Instagram, guys playing shows or playing gigs or on tour or playing at church or playing in the living room. We're seeing it a lot, which means it's getting played, which makes me really happy.
That's awesome, man. Very cool stuff. I want to just mention that DRS Racks, we don't have a ton of time to talk about it because we're getting...
Oh, I'll make it fast.
But yeah, Doug builds these racks that are really beautiful. They're out of bamboo, you said?
Yep.
Yeah, they're gorgeous.
Thank you.
And they're stackable. So check them out at drsracks.com. They're very cool. And they're also on Instagram at drsracks. But yeah, I think that's a really mature decision that, you drew a line in the sand as far as like, no, this has got to be one body style. Because the temptation is always there because you get enough people asking. And I know I run a business. I've run many businesses over the last 20 years. And it's like, got to learn to say no, just as important as you got to know when to say yes.
Titan is the brand we say no a lot on. And even from when we started thinking about it to when we launched it to now, in the first half of that spectrum, it started to get too many options. And because it was like, okay, well, five colors versus three colors. We can do five. That's not a big deal. Or, yeah, we can offer, you know, we'll offer a few more pickup options. And then finally, like a month ago, I was like, we've done this for with pre-production and actual production. We know enough now that we know what's kind of like the two most popular combos. Mm. So now we have a, okay, this is the version that we stock it. The parts are always here. You know, you pick the color, it goes out the next day. And then we have the pseudo custom shop, which was basically, it's just a small price increase for the effort that I have to go through to kind of track ordering pickups from three different companies. And, you know, like the gold pick guards, some of the other options that are more time intensive. But so we have kind of, but even then the custom shop starts at $1,450 and the, you know, it's only $150 more, for that side of it. So it's really still pretty reasonable.
See, this is what happens though. I interview builders.
So this tab is going to stay open for like a day or two. And then I'll watch the video and I'll be like, man, I'd like one of these.
Yeah.
But I interview
that's
like
me doing my job.
This is where I have to have discipline. I'd be like, you know, I'd be mental here. But I mean,
oh man,
beautiful guitar. I am excited about listening to the video though, because I'd like to hear the sound.
Sure.
It's really cool.
They're really, we just got those demos with RJ and they're fantastic. We're going to be sending him some more stuff. And he's a Cowher artist too. So
very cool, man. What's the lead time on your Cowhers right now?
Usually about 6 months for a custom Cowher.
Very, very reasonable as well.
It generally varies, but we really quote 6 to 7 months. And it's pretty rare that it goes over that. If it goes over that, it's usually not we don't do an age finish in house, but we offer it. We do it with another company. So we don't if you're going to get the age finish, we don't quote a firm timeline because we don't do it. But you know, usually we're pretty good about right about 6 months. It works out pretty good usually.
Very cool, man. Well, I'm going to talk about some personal stuff and get to know you a little bit
Now.
I'll go to the inside the music studio. what's the happiest moment or time in your life so far? You seem like a super positive, energetic guy.
For the business, would have been seeing Michael Burks play. Actually, that's both the most stressful and my happiest moment for the business was seeing that first guitar get played. I'm the worst nervous parent. I hate watching our guitars get played. I'm such a nervous parent about them. Usually, let me rephrase that. I don't mind once that guitar's been on the road a while, but that first show with the first new guitar, please be good. Please don't break us. Yeah. Outside the business, I don't know, my wife and my kids for sure. You know, me and my wife, having my kids.
How long are you married?
We've been together 16 years. We've been married 9 years now.
Man,
we met just
16 years? How old are you?
34.
Yeah, I was going to say, you must have met when you were a kid. I thought you were
young. Yeah, wow, just awesome. As we were graduating high school. Thank you.
16 years is a long time nowadays.
Yeah, I don't know how she's put up with me for that long.
I would say something like that.
So. Especially being self-employed. That was probably the only that it took her, because my wife's a teacher. Both her parents are teachers. If you're not,
they're very regimented.
They're
very conservative,
laid back.
Very conservative.
Yeah, they're pretty laid back liberal people, but they've never had My wife doesn't ever recall living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
Or worse than that, not knowing when the paycheck was going to come in. And that's tough thing about being self-employed. And it took her a while to get used to that, but she's pretty great about it.
Yeah, I would have to say if you're a business owner, you're going to have bad times once in a blue moon, and
mm-hmm.
you've got to have a
support. Being married
spouse.
To somebody with a real job really helps.
I hear you, man. Are you a rule breaker or a rule follower?
I kind of feel like I'm in the middle. I'm probably more of a rule follower. I'm pretty square in that regard. I'm that guy who doesn't run a red light, even if he's sitting by himself. I probably would say that, but I also am a very low tolerant of bullshit. I tend to push back pretty quick on people who are kind of trolling or you know, being otherwise
being a dick.
It really made me happy that this last winter name especially I had a bunch of people that came up to me, you know, and like, oh man, you know, I follow your work and I love your work and I really love following what you're doing. I'm like, oh, that's great. Thank you. He's like, but I love how you deal with assholes. And I'm like, yes, mission accomplished.
Where is this on Instagram? I'll have to go. On
oh yeah. You know, or Facebook. It doesn't happen often, luckily, but I usually give people a little rope, and then if they go too far, I'll yank the rope. And sometimes it's hysterical. We had one guy. It's a huge long story, but we had one guy who's kind of infamous. It turns out I didn't know at the time. He's a really, when you go to like NAMM or these really 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 big guitar events, there's always like this cast of characters, and there's always the guy who thinks he's a rock star but isn't. And this is one of those guys who's in that camp. And it turns out tons of people in the industry had run-ins with this guy.
Oh, wow.
And when we pulled the curtain back on Titan, he kept demanding a free guitar. And we kept telling him, like, we don't give guitars away, blah, 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 you know. And he just kept being adamant about it. And he didn't know this, but it was right around Thanksgiving when we pulled the curtain back on Titan. And I was away from the shop, snowed in at my parents' cabin, and I'd been drinking bourbon all day.
Nice.
And so the asshole in me came out, and he just set one up and just hovered it over the plate, and we just came out swinging. And like, it went all day. There was Photoshops and like memes and like, and like people on Instagram were going to this guy's account and like spamming him. And I was getting emails from other people in like the industry, and it was really hysterical. And then at the end of the day, we're like, you know what? We feel kind of bad. And we went a little over the line. So how about 10% off? And we using the coupon code, and we used that guy's name as the code. That's so we turned him into a sales promotion at the end of the day. And
well, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's a good way to close it out, right?
It was just, yeah, you know, it's a hard business to be in, and I'm not getting rich. I'm not even getting – you know, I'm at the poverty line probably.
That's what every builder I've met tells me. This
yeah.
is a great business as long as you don't want to make money. Literally
yeah.
every builder I've interviewed, and they're all like so fucking excited about what they do, just like you are. Like, man,
yep.
I love this. Don't try to make any money at it. I'm like,
oh man. Okay. Yeah, the thing is, if I'm going to be poor, I'm not going to be miserable too.
I hear
if
that.
If you want to treat me like shit and pay me a lot of money, no problem. But I'm not going to take it the other way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Going to be my way if I'm not making it. Hey, who's had the biggest influence on your life?
Oh, man. I would probably have to say my dad. I mean, you know, it's one of those things. This is going to be something that somebody's going to walk away offended. But really, actually, both my parents and my in-laws. I have amazing in-laws, and I have amazing parents. But, you know, in terms of trying to run a business, the sheer tenacity involved, you know, I watched my dad do it, you know, and my dad has always had to do this as the sole income for his family. And I can't fathom that now, yeah. Or our family. And, you know, he's the guy who, we do a lot of stuff with the local schools and for the business and stuff. And I've always been the guy. I'm not a big sports guy. I'm not a big, you know, I have friends that, oh, you know, following the Kings or whatever. I'm like, I don't care. You know,
right.
I enjoy it, but I don't
care.
Most
music guys are not. It's a rarity.
Yeah. For me, and even within music, someone, I've always been the guy who respects people who make things. If that's always been the thing I always, you know, I'm much more interested in the guy who designed a carburetor then hit 6 home runs in a single inning. You know, I don't, it's not that I don't care, but
it's
I don't care.
Thing.
Yeah. And so, and I think that comes from a lot from, you know, my dad doing the business with him. We worked on cars together. You know, I still work on cars as a hobby, and, you know, fixing things and making things out of nothing to something has been, the thing I always respect the most. And it makes me feel a little snobby when I'm like, run into friends of mine and they come to my house and like, oh yeah, you know, we did that kitchen last week. That was fun. And, how do you know how to do all that stuff? And I'm like, you don't know how to do that?
Yeah. Cause you grew up doing it. So it's totally normal because your dad's
yeah.
business. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I have, you know, I mean, I have friends that work at SpaceX and I have friends in all kinds of fields. I'm like, you know, we'll go down there and that place blows my mind. And they're like, it's just the same thing. You know, we're just guys, people making stuff.
What is SpaceX?
SpaceX is the Elon Musk rocket company.
Oh, yeah.
you know, I have friends that are engineers down there, and that place blows my mind. I'd rather go there and hang out for an hour than go to a Giants game. Though you can drink beer at a Giants game, so maybe a little bit of
a smoke weed. SpaceX.
You know? I don't know. That place is pretty
locked down.
Those guys
pretty liberal, from what I hear.
Yeah, but that's a hard working place. Yeah,
I'm sure. But, he's not tolerating that, man.
I would say my dad probably. I mean, that's
very cool.
He's still the guy who wakes up at 4 a.m. to come to work, and I'm like, when did there start being a 4 a.m? You know, I'm an early riser, but not that early.
I hear you, man. Hey, one last question, Doug.
Sure.
What's your definition of happiness?
Oh man, for me, bills are paid and family's happy. That's you know, if we can keep the lights on here at the shop and my employees get paid and I get paid and I can go, you know, we can go live our lives the way we want to live, or at least enjoy life a little bit, that's pretty happy for me, you know.
Awesome, man. Hey, listen, I can't thank you enough for your time. I really appreciate you. You're a hell of a really sweet guy, very genuine person. Well, I'm happy to talk with you.
My pleasure. I've been having fun doing this. I'm giving lots of folksy wisdom here.
Good, man. Let me give everybody your URL. So check out Doug at Kauer Guitars. That's K-A-U-E-R guitars.com. You can check out Titan Guitars at Titan Guitars, T-I-T-A-N Guitars. And you can check out Doug's Racks at drsracks.com. Is there anything else you'd like to promote? People can find you on what? Social media? You're on Instagram? You're on Facebook?
Instagram's where we're on the most. Okay. Yeah. So on Facebook, at Kauer Guitars, at Titan Guitars. Yep.
All righty, man.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, I want to appreciate you your listening. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. I want to thank you again to Doug for spending his time with us. We appreciate it. Let me know if you have any questions or topics you'd like me to discuss in a future episode, and you can do this by posting on our Facebook page at facebook.com/everyoneloves guitar, or you can email us at info@everyoneloves guitar. Now go play your guitar and have some fun. Until next time, I'm out. Peace. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.